Man, I ain't even wait to see who it was. I broke a tie to my drawers and screamed, "So long, cuz." Got halfway up the block and calmed down and stopped screaming. Then I thought, oh, I get it, I must be dreaming. I strolled back home with a grin on my grill. Figured since this is a dream, I might as well get ill. I walked in the house, the big bad Fresh Prince. And Freddy killed all that noise real quick. He grabbed me by my neck and said,
"Here's what we'll do. We got a lot of work here, me and you. Souls of your friends you and I will claim. You've got the body, and I've got the brain."
I said, "Yo, Fred, I think you've got me all wrong. I ain't partners with no one that's got nails that long." Welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. My co-host Lindsay Loveridge is here.
Hey, everybody.
How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing really well. You know why?
Why is that?
It's October.
Is it?
Yes. And that means it's my favorite month because it's spooky season.
It is indeed. Before we get into that, I just wanted to bring this up briefly. So I watched this movie last night called The Death of Dick Long. Which now
real title.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen the film Swiss Army Man. You ever seen
it? I know what it is about.
Okay, so that movie stars, it's by these two guys, and they made a movie where Paul Dano uses the farting corpse of Daniel Radcliffe to survive in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And it's a feature length troll, basically. It's a troll the entire time. So it's really funny and clever and unique and fucked up and unlike anything you've ever seen. And they have a new movie out. It's called The Death of Dick Long. And this is a movie about this sort of loser. I'm hesitant to even explain the plot.
I got the brief from you on Twitter, and I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for you to say it.
So, okay, so this is a movie about this loser guy who has a band and a wife, and one of his bandmates gets fucked to death by a horse.
Okay,
he dies of a prolapsed anus. Now, I don't know if you know what that is, but it's disgusting. And the movie only gets progressively darker and weirder from there. They really went for it on this one. It plays a little bit like a procedural for a little while.
Like who prolapsed his anus, like a sort of procedural?
It plays a little like a crime show for a little while. They're deliberately fucking with you the entire time. Now, a long time ago on the internet, this is sort of old internet stuff, but there was a story called Mr. Hands. This is based on a true...
I know this story.
This is based on a true story. So
of course I know this story.
That's what they're pulling from on this. It is a feature-length troll designed to make you upset and laugh a lot. I laughed through the whole thing just because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So it's out on digital now. You can rent it for a couple bucks. If you enjoyed Swiss Army Man, or if that kind of art speaks to you, that kind of, which is sort of a weird thing to say, but like, I don't know. I like it when people just get fucking crazy, like just nuts.
Yeah.
And this definitely does that. So The Death of Dick Long, recommended if you have the heart, if you have the saint, I like to use the phrase, if you have the sand for it. It's sort of old slang. It basically means
a reference an hourglass.
It's just old slang. It's like, do you have the metal to deal with this kind of thing? You know what I mean? That's basically what it means. But if you have the heart for it, it's going to be a unique night at the movies for you.
Is Dick Long the guy who dies from the horse?
Okay. Yes. Which is, I mean, when you think about the title and then what happens to him, it's not subtle.
Cruel irony.
It's just stupid, like, intentionally fucking with you. His name is Dick Long and he dies from a long dick. Like, it's absurd. Like, they're... Best Picture. That's what I'm saying. The horse fucking movie.
Please just like nominate it for like costume design or something.
And
so
also,
everyone has to find out what this is.
They also frequently play Nickelback intentionally.
They had to get that okayed.
Intentionally. Yeah, they did.
So Chad Kroeger knows his music is in this.
The intent.
And hopefully Avril Lavigne also knows just through, you know.
But it's like, that's just going to upset the audience. Like, if you start playing Nickelback, the audience is going to be like, oh. Well, I admire it. Anyway, as you mentioned, it's spooky season. What you and I have decided to do this October is a horror movie swap. So in other words, you give me a horror movie I've never seen, and then mm-hmm. I give you a horror movie you've never seen or haven't seen in a long time. And then we'll talk about it. We used to do this for our Christmas episodes, but since it's spooky season and you're a big horror fan, I thought it would be fun to do it this month. So
yeah,
let's start with the one that you gave me, called Goodnight Mommy. Now
we're gonna reveal so much about one another's personalities through this swap, I think.
Probably. Probably. So this is from 2014, I think, and it's German. This is about two little boys and their on the surface it looks like their mother. It's sort of it kind of seems like it's doing like a Mommy Dearest type of thing, mm-hmm. where she's like a talk show host or something, or a media personality, and she's had some plastic surgery, so her face is all bandaged up, and she's very strict with her children, but it becomes clear, you know, I don't know, in the second act, I guess, that actually one of the little boys is the villain, not the mom. It gets increasingly more fucked up from there. He winds up gluing her mouth shut and then like gluing her to the floor, and like his brother is a hallucination. Like, this is fucked up. This is a fucked up movie. You gave this to me. You were like, okay, you're gonna watch Goodnight Mommy. I was like, okay, all right. And I was like, oh my god. What the fuck? Like, it's pretty screwed up. You can rent it pretty easily on YouTube and all that stuff, in all the places you normally rent movies. I was impressed with it. It was a little slow. The performances I thought were maybe a little flat, but I appreciated what it was trying to do. And once it finally gets to the shocking stuff, it's a good one. I would recommend it if you're in the mood for something that's just like truly fucked up. Like, truly fucked up.
Yeah, I think it's got some sort of like Babadook vibes. You know, just that it's got, you know, it's a mother-son relationship that's central to it. And I guess spoilers at this point. So I think he had a legitimate like twin who died. And I think the mother actually, like, her plastic surgery was, I think it was actually corrective. Like, there was an accident. So the remaining son has not adjusted to the fact that his brother's dead, and the mom has been playing along the whole time to help with his psychosis.
Right.
So she puts out like two sets of clothes, but she doesn't talk throughout the whole movie. She's not talking to this other twin.
Yeah. They make that pretty clear that like she, you know, the other kid is not actually there. And then they reveal that his brother died and he's just not processing it very well, I suppose.
He also collects bugs. There's like that a whole bit with the cockroaches.
Yeah, and then one of them like crawls into her mouth, and man, it's a rough one. But it's good, and I'm glad you recommended it to me, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think if you revisit it after knowing the twist, it seems more like the mom is obviously going through a whole bunch of grief.
Yeah.
You know, she's like depressed, staying in bed. She's not parenting her son because she doesn't know what to do. She feels like she's stalking, like can't get out of this situation. And meanwhile, her son is like making creepy voodoo masks and
raising a terrarium full of cockroaches.
Well,
it's pretty fucked up. Good horror movie though. Like,
yeah, very unsettling.
Yeah.
They submitted this movie for consideration for the Oscar that year for foreign film. It didn't get the nomination, but it was submitted.
Yeah, I can probably see why not. The Academy has never respected horror as a genre.
No, it doesn't.
So, especially not back then, you know. Mm-hmm. At this point, this thing is five years old or something like that. So,
yeah.
No, but I like, if you're looking for something unique to see, I would recommend it. It's a good one. I liked it.
Yeah.
So, the movie I gave you was
Tales from the Dark Side, the movie starring Christian Slater and
Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
So,
and I recognize the little boy in it too, but I can't place who he is.
Oh,
the one who's captive.
Yeah. I wish I knew that right off.
He might've been like a 90s child star that was in a lot of stuff or something. I can't remember who he is.
It unfortunately also stars James Woods, but you know, we don't have to get into that.
We don't have to talk about him.
Yeah. So this movie, well, okay. I recapped, you know, Mommy Dearest too. So you can go on.
It's an anthology film. It kind of plays with someone reading you a story premise like they did with Princess Bride. That's what that reminded me of. Only this time, instead of a grandpa reading it to his grandson who's sick, it's a boy reading it to his captor who's planning to eat him in her oven because she's preparing a dinner party.
Notably, lead singer of Blondie, Debbie Harry.
Who's
playing that.
So Debbie Harry, yeah, she's a cannibal, I guess, and she's going to eat this kid, but, you know, he's delaying his inevitable demise by reading stories in a book that she's given him to entertain himself, I guess. And so each story is one of the stories he's reading. And the first one we get has Christian Slater and Steve Buscemi as college students.
Uh-huh.
Thinking of Steve Buscemi as a college student is funny to me because it's always...
Okay, it's pronounced Buscemi.
Is it Buscemi? Not Buscemi?
It's not Buscemi. It's Buscemi.
Okay. Steve Buscemi.
Leaving that in. Yeah. Leaving this in.
Steve Buscemi is this nerdy college guy who collects antiques to resell for profit. And he's mad because he didn't get a grant due to this Chad type guy who's dating Christian Slater's sister. So she writes all of his stuff for him. And so he summons a mummy assassin.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
To kill them all.
With like an obviously styrofoam sarcophagus? Where they just like lift the lid off of it with their hands?
He was like, he finds a scroll inside of his stomach and it has an incantation on it. Right. And it brings it to life. And then he just sends it to go kill the people who have wronged him. And
then Christian Slater saws it apart with like a kitchen utensil.
I think it's like a motorized carving thing you're supposed to use for a turkey.
Yeah.
He just like takes it to the mummy dude and then, you know, lights it on fire. Right. But Steve Buscemi gets away to enact revenge again.
Yeah. 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 So that was the first segment. This is based on an old horror anthology TV show called Tales from the Dark Side that, you know, ran syndicated back in the 80s, I think, late 80s, early 90s. And I used to watch that show over at my, like, relative's house, you know, late at night with my cousin. And, I had never seen this movie somehow. And I rewatched it recently and was like, well, this is fun.
Yeah, I think the first thing to point out is that this is a horror movie, only that it contains monsters in it. But it's not scary. This is more, like, entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, other than a few F-bombs, you could probably show it to your kids and it wouldn't freak them out, you know?
Well, okay, now that I don't know about. So the second segment, which is my favorite.
Yeah, boobs in the third. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, there's some nudity in it and stuff. The second segment is called The Cat from Hell, and it's phenomenal.
Is this the one that Stephen King did for it?
Stephen King wrote this, which means you know it's going to sympathize with the cat.
That man loves cats. I was thinking about it after watching this, and he's put cats in a whole bunch of his short stories and even his longer ones, like Pet Sematary, the one that's got a cat sheriff.
Sleepwalkers? Clovis? Sleepwalkers.
Yeah, yes, yeah. I watched that one a lot as a kid. And I mean, this one, and I feel like there's more. Cat's Eye too is another one.
I just watched that, and it was it was strange, but I enjoyed it. It was
kind of related to this one though, because it has that same breath stealing element.
Yeah, right. And then it turns out that it's not the cat stealing your breath; it's a little troll thing that, and then the cat defeats the troll.
Yeah, doesn't he defeat it with a record player or something?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so the second segment of this one, Cat from Hell, is about a wealthy family that has a giant mansion, and there's a black cat that lives there that has murdered half of them, and there's like one guy left who's in a wheelchair, and he hires like a private investigator, like basically a hitman, to take the, to take the cat out.
Gotta give him $100,000
to kill the cat.
Kill this cat.
But guess what happens? The cat fucks him up, just totally wrecks him, and then kills everyone. Like, he wins, and then walks away.
It's important to know the cat's motivations for murder. Okay, this cat wasn't born this way. He decided to make this decision because the old man ran a pharmaceutical company that experimented on and led to the deaths of thousands of cats.
Yeah.
So really, he's avenging his fallen brothers here.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That is like, that's my jam right there. Like, animals getting revenge for being exploited. That's perfect. Like, I really like that second segment. I need to like rent out a theater and just show that part. Like
the scene where it like crawls into a dude's mouth completely and then just like hangs out in his stomach for a while and then comes back out.
Yeah, and then comes
super gross.
It's really gross. Like it climbs in through his mouth and it sort of gets into his guts and then just comes back out and murders the last living family member.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Like, yeah, I don't know, man. That was cool as hell. Kudos, Stephen King. My hat is off to you. That was good shit. So the final segment, what is that about?
So the third segment pulls actually from classic fairy tales. There's a lot of fairy tales that have the same setup where a man meets some sort of monster and ends up in a relationship with it. As long as he never reveals what it really is, they can stay together. And in those stories, he always does and they always leave.
Right.
So in this one, the monster is a gargoyle who, for reasons unknown, just like straight up kills a couple people in the alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees it and then it starts to talk. And that was hilarious to me, just because you have this gross looking like monster. I don't think it was someone in a suit. It was like a puppet. No,
it's definitely a puppet. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it starts talking in this very articulated, like normal voice. It's like, hey, you know, as long as you never tell anybody what you saw, I'll let you live. And then not long after that, he runs into this woman who's supposedly lost and they hook up because that's what you do right after you're attacked by a gargoyle and see your friend murdered.
Sure.
Sure. And they, you know, flash forward a couple times, they get married, they have kids. And then he decides to finally reveal to his wife about the gargoyle that killed his friend. And then the wife is the gargoyle and their children are tiny gargoyles and she takes them and, you know, laments that they can't be together anymore and leaves and goes back to the roof of some building somewhere.
Yeah. Really cool effects. Like,
yes. Yeah.
Really, really cool effects. I was really impressed with, just the way it looked. Like, honestly, I pulled this movie up and was like, all right. But I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. Like, It has really cool in-camera effects, especially that final segment. The puppet work is really impressive. Like,
yeah, the sort of body horror part where she's turning back into the gargoyle and everything's like
which is
out of her back and her arms and stuff.
Exactly. And like it's kind of rough to watch it, but it's really good. Like, they did a phenomenal job on the effects on that thing. So I don't know. And then, you know, the framing device kind of ends, you know, with the witch and the little kid who's going to get eaten.
The Hansel and Gretel sort of idea. She's feeding him cookie dough.
Right. Yeah. She's fattening him up so she can put him in the oven. Debbie Harry, you know, from Blondie. I don't know. I don't know. I did you enjoy it? I liked it a lot.
I did. It reminds me of, there's a couple other anthology films, sort of like Creepshow. That was one I really liked as a kid too. And it's kind of in the same vein as that. Creepshow, I think, is a little bit scarier, so to speak. But it's still got a lot of like, you know, humor to it. Steve Martin's a really evil guy in that movie.
Creepshow is it's been a while since I've seen that one, but I kind of miss the horror anthology movie. But Creepshow is back, actually. There's a new series.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't gotten around to it yet, but there is a new series. Admittedly, I prefer stuff from like the 80s and 90s where they had to do the effects in camera, so it's not just CG all the time, because it's just a little bit, it's just a little more charming, and it's fun to see like just the sheer amount of engineering and stuff that had to go into it back then. But I'll probably check that new Creepshow out. It looks okay.
I like monster movies from that period a lot too, like Werewolf in London,
right?
Stuff where they really had to the monster that they had in Creepshow at the end, that was really good. They called him Fluffy, and it was just like a monster in a box,
right,
that started killing all these people in a college. But that too was puppet work and stuff, and it was really, that thing freaked me out as a kid.
Well, I mean, all right, so I consider this to be a successful movie swap. You gave me a good one. I feel like I gave you a good one.
Yeah.
So we'll try again next week and see how it goes.
Yeah.
So what's in the news, Lindsay?
Let's see. Well, we've got a couple different things. I guess I'll start with Promare is doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
G-Kids is extending its run, and it's going to get another showing in the U.S. on December 8th, this time with brand new stuff. A lot of people think it'll probably be the theater OVAs that they created. There was one that was just central to Leo and one that was just central to Gallows. So we might actually get some new footage to kind of entice viewers if they've already gone to see it.
Cool.
I'll definitely go see it this time.
Oh, you never made it out to see it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, man.
I know, right? So I will go. I will go this time if it comes back to the Washington, Oregon area.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it, I suppose. that sounds good. You can't keep me away. I'll probably go see it again. So screw it. Like, that sounds great. I would love to see some extra content on that one. That movie really spoke to me. I really enjoyed it. I honestly do think it's maybe the strongest thing Trigger's ever made.
Yeah.
It's a good one. So if you
I'm glad to see it's doing so well in theaters too. It was ranked number 3 at the box office at one point, which is just crazy for an anime film.
That's nuts, but it's a really fucking strong movie. Like, it's a strong film with a really impressive design. All you have to do is see the poster, and it's like, okay, I'll see that. You know, like, it doesn't take a lot to get people into the theater for something like that, I don't think. When you have that strong a production design, and that powerful a film, and you know, like, I don't know anyone who walked out of Promare saying like, it was okay, I guess.
Yeah, I've only seen really positive reactions.
Most people walk out of it going, holy shit, watch that movie. Holy shit. So when you have something that's that strong, yeah, of course. Of course it does well. Like, quality speaks for itself. So I'm really happy that it's doing so well. I'm really happy it's going to be back in theaters, which means I can get to go see it again. That's going to be fun. So
yeah, I really want to see it in a theater experience. I think it's probably way better that way than just watching it at home.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I don't have any idea when they have the Blu-ray or the 4K or whatever it is planned for the film, but I'm excited to own it. At the same time, it's much more fun to watch it in the movie theater.
So, yeah.
What I want them to do is 4DX.
Okay.
So, you know, you have the seats that move like you're on Star Tours.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know?
Spray water in your face and shit.
Yeah. Turn up the heat in your seat warmer or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be great. Great. Yeah. those seats can like punch you in the back, and like they tilt. Would you know, like, not quite 360 degrees, but they tilt quite a lot.
Wow. I don't think I've been to a showing that actually had the chairs.
Yeah, no, most really people, it's rare to find a 4DX theater, but it's, you've been on Star Tours.
Yeah.
It's basically that, except for the entire movie. is like that. It's absurd, but I would totally see Premiere in 40X. I would totally be there. That sounds great. Yeah, go see it, man. If it comes back out and you still haven't made time for it, go fucking see Premiere. It is legit one of the... I think it's on my... So I keep a list of the best movies I've seen this year because I go to a lot of movies. Mm-hmm. Premiere is currently number 3.
Oh, okay.
And the third best film I've seen this year. I actually put it above Alita, Battle
Angel. Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's the thing. Go see it. Anything else?
Yeah. Masaaki Yuasa, one of my favorite directors.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a lot of stuff going on right now. He's on like 4 different projects, and they just announced that he will be adapting Japan Sinks, the novel, sci-fi novel, for a 10-episode Netflix series next year.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah, I'm excited to see that. I haven't read the book, which I guess is kind of a crime. It's supposed to be pretty phenomenal. Is it like classic sci-fi?
Is it available? It's available in English, right?
Yeah. Japan Sinks came out in 19. The story takes place in the 70s. I don't know if the book came out in the 70s or a little bit before that, but yes, I know it's available in English. So maybe I should pick it up and read it. They'll be moving the setting, though. So the anime series won't take place in the 70s. It's going to take place in 2020. Kind of interesting because it's going to be just after the Tokyo Olympics. And this is a disaster film. So that seems a little, I don't know, risky maybe. But I'm interested to see it.
Yeah, nah, I don't think it's risky. It'll do fine. It's Netflix content. It's a little surprising that they're... Well, no, it's not, actually. That just totally makes sense. And they probably went to Yuasa and was like, hey, what do you want to make? And he said, I want to make this. And they said, all right. And now he's making it. So, I don't know. Like, the Olympics are a little overblown in terms of, like, Japan's image. Not to be too, I don't know, dismissive of it, but like I understand that like Tokyo is obsessed with this right now, and that's, you know, to be understood. That's fine, but I don't think it's really going to impact culture there that much, and I don't think that they necessarily need to be so image conscious ahead of the Olympics that something like this couldn't get made. Like, really? Like, oh, everyone is so concerned with the 100-meter dash that you can't make this? Like, what? Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't think the Olympics means that every piece of pop culture that comes out of Japan is going to be, like, totally scrubbed for family-friendly bullshit, whatever. Like, yeah. It doesn't really seem like how it's going to go.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be that extreme. I mean, they've made some small things already. Like pulling porn mags from convenience stores, sort of stuff like that to try and clean it up a little bit, because they're assuming they're going to have a lot of foreign guests who are going to come in there into the 7-Eleven or Lawson or whatever, and maybe don't have the boobies right there, I guess. But I haven't seen much as far as like preemptive censorship of media. There's definitely maybe more sports media coming out to sort of tie in a little bit, but that's not the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure they're timing the release of that Evangelion movie around this, which is, you know, makes sense. Like, if you're gonna visit Japan for the Olympics, and hey, look, there's an Evangelion movie that's in theaters, I can go see it. Like, you know, all right, okay, I understand that, but yeah, I don't know. The Olympics thing seems kind of overblown to me. Like, in terms of a justification for, you know, what they do and how they regulate content there, it just seems a little overblown. People don't really care that much about the Olympics anymore. Like, the ratings have been on a steady decline for a very long time.
I would also keep in mind that a lot of anime is, like, late night stuff, too. It's not just up on the, you know, all this, like, the fan service shows and whatever are airing at 2 a.m. It's not like it's going to be out in the open for everybody who's going to the Olympics and, like, turning on their TV.
Yeah, totally.
Things like that. I mean, it's already kind of sequestered into this, like, late night adult block.
Yeah, I mean, like, if they held the Olympics in Los Angeles again, hopefully they never will, Because that would be a traffic nightmare that I would not want to deal with.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that doesn't mean that suddenly Adult Swim is just going to go off the air and that they'll stop selling porn magazines in 7-Eleven. Like, that's silly. Like, it's ridiculous. So, yeah, I don't know. Well, anyway, what else is new?
What else we got? Holiday season 2020. I hope you have like $600 saved up, because that's what it might take to get the PlayStation 5.
Oh, right. The PlayStation 5.
It'll have adaptive triggers.
Right. I don't know what that means.
It'll allow developers to adjust resistance in the triggers.
Okay.
Well, so I guess, I don't know, for certain games, they can make it so you have to push it harder.
Hey, you know what's good? Untitled Goose Game.
Hey, I heard you played that, I've watched a lot of streamers play it. It looks adorable.
Yeah, I don't... That game is wonderful. It is wonderful. You just play as a goose and you fuck with people.
Yeah.
It's all you honk and flap and fuck with, steal their shit and dump it in the lake. And it's wonderful. I don't know. Like, I will certainly buy a PS5 whenever it comes out, probably at the second hardware revision. I usually wait until there's one hardware revision, because then they'll get it. You know, it's been refined a little bit, and you know, the old, you know, I have a PS4 Pro, and that'll run everything up until the PS5 comes out. I think I might hang back on that one.
I've fallen so far off the console market at this point that I don't know if they could release a title where I'd feel like I had to get it. That used to be my motivator when I would update. It was like, okay, finally, you know, this game from this franchise has come out and I need to play that. I really want that. So I guess I finally update my console. But I don't know that PlayStation has something at this point that isn't also released on the Switch or PC.
Yeah.
So I don't really feel the motivation anymore like I used to.
Yeah, like if you have a decent PC, you can play basically anything, like anything you want, you know, provided you have an okay graphics card and but the technology really hasn't moved along that far, and I doubt that the PS5, like, at launch will really be that huge an improvement in terms of, like, graphic fidelity. But I also don't give a shit really anymore about, like, AAA games with photoreal graphics.
Same.
I just want the game to be interesting and well-written and fun. That's all I care about. You know, like the thing I've played the most recently is the Super Nintendo app on the Switch. That is Super Mario World. That is largely what I have been playing. Whatever. You know, I don't know. I'm not really paid to keep up with video games. I don't know. Whatever, it'll come out. I'll get one eventually. Shrug.
Yeah. And the last thing for news today kind of ties into one of the series we're going to talk about, but Hiroaki Samura, who's the creator of Blade of the Immortal, has another series called Wave Listen to Me, and this felt relevant to our show because it's about a lady who ends up getting a radio show after she is recorded at a bar just going off about something she's upset about, and they play it on the air later. And so she storms into the radio station and is like, hey, you know, this is crap. What are you doing? And they're like, no, actually, we want to give you a talk show where you can just talk and let it out. You know, she's not overly polite, I guess, is what made her kind of take off. And so she gets a radio program.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
I like that. Admittedly, you know, Hiroaki Samura is like, well, you know, not the biggest fan, but that sounds really cool. That sounds really good.
Yeah, we don't get a ton of shows with a lead female protagonist who's an adult. So she's like 26-year-old single woman.
Oh, yeah, right. Ancient.
Oh, no.
She's an old woman at 26. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that sounds cool. I'm excited about that. That's a very interesting premise. I like it a lot. Sounds good.
Yeah, it's not anything I've heard of before, so I'll check that out. It's due out spring 2020.
Cool. Well, yeah, we'll see it then. But we have seen some stuff that is airing right now.
Yes.
We are not actually finished with the fall preview guide yet.
No, it's still going.
It's still going.
We still haven't gotten My Hero Academia yet.
Still running. We got, yeah, I think that's this weekend, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, but I did get around to some premieres. However, I want you to start and let me know, what have you been watching?
Okay, so full run of what I've watched so far. I watched Blade of the Immortal. I've watched the Jet Ski Booby Show. That's not the official title. I Asked for My Abilities to Be Average in the Next Life, Africa Salaryman, Special 7, Fate Babylon, Outburst Dreamer Boys, Orisuki, and Ahiru no Sora.
Okay, let's start with those last ones because those are the ones that I didn't get to. So starting from the bottom of the list you just gave me, let's go up. Let's start with the first one.
Okay, Ahiru no Sora is a basketball show. It's about an orphaned boy. His mom was a stellar female basketball player, and he wants to live up to her name. So he joins a school and wants to join the basketball club. But the basketball club is run by a bunch of delinquents, like classic, you know, 1950s greaser hair delinquents. They run the court, so to speak, and aren't interested in having an actual basketball club. So he decides to stand up to them and challenges them to a basketball match for the right to be on the team. That's what happens in the first episode. The character designs are pretty interesting. It doesn't look like your average anime show as far as, like, the designs are pretty distinctive. The delinquents is kind of a neat angle on it. And I'm always open for, like, one good sports show each season as I continually wait for more Haikyuu, as I have for years.
Right.
Please give me more Haikyuu. Please, my crops are dying. So I'll watch this one. It's animated pretty well as far as the basketball sequences go. And the main character is likable enough. Doesn't seem to have a whole lot of comedy in it, really. I think it might be more of a drama. And he meets the female basketball team, too. And so there may be a love interest there with this girl named Madoka, who's a very good basketball player, too. So it's got, you know, all the pieces that I like in a good sports drama. So I'd check it out.
I heard people comparing it to Kuroko's Basketball.
I have not watched Kuroko's Basketball. I don't know if they're comparable because I thought Kuroko's Basketball kind of took a Prince of Tennis approach where they have sort of like powers, kind of sports powers. I don't think there's any of that in here.
Yeah, nah, it seems a little more down to earth, I suppose.
Yeah, more down to earth. After that, I watched Orisuki, which is probably going to be divisive, I think.
Oh, yeah, why so?
It's a rom-com, and the first half plays it straight. You've got your average dude. He's nice. He's on the student council. He's got a childhood friend who seems to like him. He's got a cool best friend who plays sports, and the student council president seems to like him, too. And he goes on a date with the student council president, where she reveals she's got a crush on his best friend and would he please help her hook up with him? Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay, yeah, sure, I guess I will. And then he goes, the next day, goes on a date with his childhood best friend. And she reveals that she also has a crush on his buddy. And will he help her hook up with him? And then the first half of the episode ends and it reveals that the main character is a total asshole. And his entire personality for the first half of the episode was just a ploy, like a pickup artist type deal. He's been reading books and stuff on how to hook up and, you know, get the high school romance of his dreams. And so he tailored his personality to hopefully get one of them to like him, and it backfired. So his next plot is to help both of them at the same time, and he'll just hook up with whoever doesn't get to date his friend.
Okay.
But then he goes to the school library and it turns out he's got a stalker and she knows that he's a piece of shit and likes him anyway.
Okay. Smash cut to credits. The end. No need to continue the story. Sounds like he's found his true love. All right.
Yes. Yeah. She's going to blackmail him to hang out with her so that she doesn't reveal that he's shitty. Yeah.
Well, anyway.
I told you that it's actually kind of funny and I didn't hate it, even though all of that is true.
Well, sure. I don't know. It sounds like, I don't know. That sounds kind of, it sounds kind of obnoxious.
Yeah.
A little bit. I didn't get around to that one, but I read the reviews of it and I was like, Okay.
I think I'm mostly going to stick with it for the library girl. She's kind of got that Watamote main character look, which I don't know. I have a soft spot for it.
Heavy bags under the eyes and everything.
She doesn't have the heavy bags, but she's got big glasses, so her eyes aren't visible most of the time. And she's got thick braided hair, and, you know, she's kind of evil. So,
Okay.
So then the next one I watched was Outburst Dreamer Boys, which was actually pretty charming.
Yeah, I was told this one was pretty good. I meant to get to it, but I had some other stuff to do. So tell me about this one.
Okay, so Outburst Dreamer Boys is about a heroes club at a high school where all the boys are Chuni, which is short for Chunbyo. They have delusions of grandeur.
Right.
So in this case, one of the boys is convinced that all of them are members of a Super Sentai team. Another one thinks he's half angel, half devil, you know, just sort of ridiculousness like that. This girl transfers in, and unfortunately she's had an eye infection. So she's wearing an eye patch, which totally convinces all of them that she's got to be Chuni too, because only obnoxious Chuni girls would wear an eye patch. I don't know if it's intentional or not, but it seems kind of like a jab at that Kyoto Animation show that had a girl with Chunbyo and she also wore an eye patch. Don't remember what it was called. They had to change the name a whole bunch because Chunbyo does not translate well into English at all.
You're talking about Love, Chunibyo, and Other Delusions.
Yeah, that one. And I mean, usually when an anime character shows up with an eye patch, she is like weird or something. Like, there's a girl in Kakega Rui who's got an eye patch and she's completely crazy. Anyway, so they want to get her in the club too and be the Pink Ranger to their group and help her make friends. And she just really wants a normal life. So it's sort of just a straight man comedy. But it's cute. It's cute.
You enjoyed it?
I did. It's not something where I'll feel compelled to watch it every week. But I'll probably check in on it every couple weeks and catch up. And if it's still funny, I'll keep watching it.
Cool.
Like low stakes stuff, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like stuff that's like sort of attempting to be honest about Chuni types, because our society is full of Chunibyos.
Yes.
It is full of them. And like, it's not as rare. Like, some of these shows are like, oh, look at these weirdos. It's like, this is like half of everyone now. Like, they all act like most people, like, will act like this on their social media, at least. So, it you know, it's relatable.
Did you know any Chunis in, like, high school, Zach? Because I did.
I sure did.
Yeah. I went to a...
Like, not to get too personal about this, but I have dated several of them.
Yeah. Well, okay, so the delusions that I'm going to talk about were probably maybe less serious, but... when I was in high school, I went to an art school, so we already had a lot of...
Oh, God.
Archetypes.
Chuni Central.
Right. And I definitely had one friend who was totally convinced that she could see auras and tell you what color they were.
Oh, God.
And I definitely had a friend who believed, like, she had a, like, guardian watching over her, and she could feel him when he was there, and so that kind of stuff. You know, I know at least one of them completely grew out of it. So it was definitely just like a stage of life, teenager wanting to be special thing. You know, we all kind of wish we had superpowers at one point in our life, I think. And some of us, you know, try to sell it a little more.
It can be charming when you're in your early 20s or your late teens. But if you're like a 40-year-old Junie,
we were like 15 at the time. You can sum that up as just quirky.
Yeah.
I think you get past a certain age and you're just like, buddy, I'm sorry, but it ain't real.
Yeah.
Okay. I watched Fate Babylon.
I did not. How was that?
I have not played the game. So with that in mind, I liked it well enough. I don't think you really need a whole lot of the backstory, unless it's going to get me killed by Fate fans. But I think you can jump in more or less not knowing a lot about the game. They give you enough information in the beginning to be like, okay, well, I know why they're going to this place and why they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some pretty awesome cuts of fight animation in it.
Cool.
Especially with Ishtar, who looks exactly like Rin Tosaka, because they kind of like reuse character designs over and over in this thing.
Right. What's it about?
Oh, okay.
You're like,
no, I can do this. So In the future, all right, there's an organization called Chaldea, and they basically monitor the timelines, and there have been disruptions throughout the timelines that are threatening to destroy everything. And we're jumping in after they've already completed 6 of those disturbances. They're going on to the last one, and it's in Babylon. So they're going all the way back in time to Babylon to deal with the latest timeline disturbance.
Not to be confused with the currently airing anime Babylon.
Not at all to be confused with Babylon on Amazon Prime. No. So they show up, they meet Enkidu, who was supposed to be the lover of Gilgamesh. Enkidu, and he right. seems to have some ideas of like what's going on as far as all this timeline stuff, which is, you know, suspicious because he shouldn't know anything about Chaldea and whatnot. And we run into Ishtar, and she's one of the goddesses who there's supposed to be 3 of them kind of wreaking havoc around. So there seems to be a clash between the goddesses and maybe Gilgamesh and Babylonia. So, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So that's that. Like I said, it's got some great animation, like action cuts in it. It's not by UFO Table this time. I can't place what studio is in charge of it this time, but it still, it looks pretty good. And then the next one I watched is Special 7, and I have almost nothing to say about that because I thought it was boring.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's so...
It's basically just a procedural, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be procedural. I don't think there's going to be, like, an overarching, like, big conspiracy or anything yet, but I don't know for sure. It's about a unit, a special unit. Mm-hmm. There are 7 people in it, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's got a lady with a vampire. There's a vampire lady with a sword who can flash bullets. That's, you know, this is kind of, I might watch it just for a vampire lady who slashes bullets because that's kind of weird. But yeah, it stars like an everyman. He's in this special unit. In the first episode, he gets roped into a bank robbery. Like he just walked into a bank off duty and it gets robbed. And he meets another guy who was also just happened to be there. And then they get rescued from the bank robbers. Yeah. I think the character design, the art design is kind of ugly too. So it's very kind of washed out. I'd have to check who the original character designer is because it's pretty distinctive, but I don't think it translates to animation very well. It's very blocky sort of looking.
Yeah. Yep. Sounds skippable.
Yeah, so now we're to stuff that you have seen.
All right, okay. So first thing was Africa Salaryman.
What'd you think of Africa Salaryman?
So, well, first, so this is about a lion, a toucan, and a lizard that work in an office together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much the premise. that's basically it. I was let down by this. It pulls from a little film called The Lion King early on. I was very amused with that, but then it quickly kind of descends into the toucan is a pervert and all the jokes are going to be about how the toucan is a pervert and constantly rips the lizard's tail off because he can regrow limbs and stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was funny at all.
No, I think it was a mistake for them to go with a toucan focused episode first on because he's the least likable of them.
Well, yeah, I don't know what they were thinking with this, but like, great premise, cute character designs, loved Lion King reference. God, I wish the writing was better because this would easily be my favorite thing if the writing was good.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, also, there's some interesting art choices in it. Like the scene where the lion gets catnip is probably the best part of it.
Probably. Yeah, no, you're not wrong. It's 3D CG for the most part, and it doesn't look bad. It's just it's not funny. Not funny. It's just kind of shitty, and I'm not sure who it's for.
Yeah,
because
like a cynical angry dude or something. Because I mean,
cynical angry guys don't necessarily want to watch something that's about animals. So you know what I mean? Like funnier comedy that isn't so harsh. and sort of perverse would probably work better for this sort of thing. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's mean.
Yeah, it's very mean.
Like, there's a whole segment about the toucan going on a group date, and one of the girls who's supposed to be very wealthy is a pig. And I mean, there's a twist to that at the end, but even with the twist at the end, it's like,
it doesn't work.
It's shitty.
Yeah, it's shitty to like the gorilla girl and the, like, it's crappy. Like, come on. This could have been so good. Like, what a great premise that sucks in execution.
I
don't like that toucan. I probably will not follow his nose wherever it goes, so to speak. That was a letdown, because once I had learned, like, oh, what is this? Oh, wait, what? And then I saw the preview and they're just doing the Lion King. I was like, holy shit. Oh my God, this is going to be my jam. And then I saw the episode and I was like, no. Well, anyway. Next thing I saw was, Blade of the Immortal, which, so what's that about?
Blade of the Immortal is about an assassin in feudal Japan who has committed so many crimes that he has to kill evil people for redemption. Also, he can't die because of bloodworms.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever read the comics.
I have not.
It's been around forever. And yeah. There's a live action movie of this that is... I don't think it's as good as this adaptation. This adaptation seemed pretty solid to me. I thought it was fine. Now, admittedly, I'm not the hugest fan of this story. It's always seemed a little meh, you know, to me. Like, I get kind of bored with like hyper violent samurai stuff. I get kind of bored with it. And this is sort of one of the examples, like the classic examples of that exact thing. So, you know, personally, my attitude towards it is kind of shrug. But this is a very good, I thought it was a very solid adaptation of the material. And it made it easy to kind of get right into the story. I thought, anyway.
I thought artistically it was also very pretty.
Yeah, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it looks great. The backgrounds are beautiful. They're doing some really interesting things with the animation cuts. Like, they're not telling the story. I mean, it's easy to follow, but they're still trying to do inventive things with how it's presented, especially in the beginning. There's that whole scene with the yellow flowers and
right.
I didn't know what that was about at first. And then she's at the grave. And if you don't know the manga, I feel like it'll surprise you in a lot of ways, too. Like, I did not expect that twist with the villain when his cape came off. I didn't know that was coming. So for me, that was like, oh, God.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, Blade of the Immortal. It's been around for a long time. Like, they used to sell that shit in floppies. Like, you know, single issue comics. They used to sell it that way. That's how long that shit's been around.
That's a Dark Horse title, right?
It was indeed. They've done a lot with that. But this seems like maybe the strongest adaptation so far. I enjoyed it. I'm not sure that like it's hyper violent, like extremely violent. So you need to have a stomach for it, but, I'll probably wind up following this one. That seems like it's sort of on my short list of like, okay, sure, I'll watch this every week.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing was, I have it written down as Kondagawa Jet Boobs.
Yeah.
That's what I have written down. This is the jet ski boob show by the people who made Senran Kagura, which you may remember as the boob ninja thing that has like 400,000 video game spinoffs
and manga.
Like, there's a ton of it. So this is just more like,
it's got a cooking spinoff.
It does indeed. I literally have a copy. Like, they sent me a copy of the pinball game based on Senran Kagura, where you smack pinballs into like their butts and their boobs, and they're like, yeah, you know, like when you smack the pinball into their butt, like it's so fucking stupid. So
stupid. I wish it was a full size pinball machine, though.
Well, that would be. I mean, that would. What would you have, like, a live actress doing it or something there?
I would have a recording. It would be a full-size pinball machine. You'd have to have, like, an actual butt that comes up, you know, all could actually hit.
Animatronic butt.
you hit it enough times, it like spins around or something, you know?
And yeah, they have like a security guard next to it. It's like, sir, please don't touch the butt. don't touch the pinball butt. anyway, this is a stupid ass show where girls
hire me, guys.
girls have enormous everything, and they ride jet skis and they shoot each other with laser guns that make their clothes disappear.
Yeah, so, shoot each other with laser guns in the taint that makes their clothes disappear.
In the taint, yeah, right in the smack dab in the taint
twice.
Admittedly, I don't know, I didn't hate it, but like. Oh, geez. Like, it always just makes me kind of facepalm a little bit, like, all right.
And again, this, like our previous sports show we talked about, this is our main character wants to become the best jet ski battler lady, just like her mom.
I wonder if she'll pursue her dream.
And it's a partner show, so also, you know, there's lots of Yuri subtext.
Yeah, there's a ton of that, like. Yeah, there's a lot of that, actually. Like, I was a little surprised at, like, oh, okay, all right, whatever, you know. But what that means is that they basically smoosh their boobs up against each other while they're on the jet ski. That's, like, kind of why that that exists in the first place. It's fucking whatever.
So, the thing that got me the most about this show, or that I found funniest about it, I guess, is that when it was being promoted, I didn't know it was going to be a booby show. And it was sold as sort of another tourism anime. So they that a lot now, where an anime will take place in a very specific spot in the hopes that it'll draw people there. And this one is for a specific river in, I think it's Kanagawa Prefecture.
Right.
So I thought it wouldn't, I didn't think it would go this sexy for something that's possibly government sanctioned in some way. And then also, why jet skis? No one has given a shit about jet skis since like 1994.
So are they gonna like block off a section of the
river,
the beach next to the river, as like a jack off area? Like, you come here and jerk it
into the river
and think about the boob show. Like, is that what they're gonna do? Like,
live performances.
I cannot imagine this would drive any tourism at all. That is absurd. But you know, I don't know, there's worse things in the world. Like,
I didn't find it in any way offensive. Just
whatever.
You know, it's just whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's pretty much everything I saw. So last thing I saw was, didn't I say to make my abilities average in the next life, which is about a girl who gets reincarnated at, now hang on a second.
Wait.
I don't want to blow your mind. Transported to another world.
No.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And she winds up there and she's overpowered and meet some people, and they start sort of a Dungeons & Dragons-esque adventure.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, the only thing really notable about the show itself is that it's an all-female group.
Sure. Like the jet ski girls.
An all-female isekai show.
Okay.
Which we don't get a whole lot of. I thought it was okay.
What a crushing blow for civil rights that is.
I hate you, Zach. We want equal isekai representation.
Uh-huh, yeah, it sure is meaningful. Anyway. I had no feelings about this. I watched it and was like, uh-huh.
But what if... I thought the knight was cute. I like her because she's, you know, kind of a Sailor Uranus type. So I'll watch it for that.
Well, so who's the villain? What's the like?
I don't know.
Driving premise. It's not there yet.
I don't think it has a villain yet. No, there's no like. No, she wants to. Like, she's gonna go into adventurer school, and she makes some friends. And
there's openly no point.
Yes.
No point at all.
No. I mean, she saves someone, but that seemed like a one-off plot. Like, it doesn't seem like the main point of the story.
Whatever. God, I'm tired of isekai. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's not like you can't do it right or anything. It's just that, like, it's so overused at this point that if that's the premise of your show... Like, literally, we were just making jokes about this last time.
Yeah.
Every fucking show is, and then they get transported to another world. Like, I need to like write a song about it or something. It's just the same fucking shit over and over and over, and over and over again. Like,
why not just make it straight fantasy at this point?
Yeah, like, just straight fantasy. It doesn't have to be like,
there is no other world, just the fantasy world. It's okay.
I was a boring loser, but then, all right, okay. Man, I am sick of it. Yeah. There's so much of it this season. And maybe, who knows, maybe, you know, in 3 months there will be another 40 new shows and we'll have to sift through those. So yeah. maybe there'll be less of it then. Man, I'm tired of it.
Also, I doubt it.
You think you doubt that there will be less of it then?
I don't think so.
It's going to be even more.
I will make bets now. I'll bet you $5 there's at least 5.
Okay, I'll take that bet.
All right.
I'm going to owe you $5. All right, okay. We got a Twitter question here from a friend of the show, Grant the Thief. Blade of the Immortal, is this a good jumping on point for those of us unfamiliar with the series? And if either of you saw the Takashi Miike live action film, how'd you feel about that? I think it's a perfect jumping on point. If you're not familiar with Blade of the Immortal, this is a real good place to get started. You'll get it right away. It's not a very complicated story, provided you're not like starting from the middle or picking up issue 350 or something like that. Like, this is this will give you the goods if that's what you're after. And it's a good place to familiarize yourself, I think, with that story. So that's what I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I was completely brand new to it and I didn't have any problems, so I can't say that it's better or worse than maybe some of the other adaptations, but I don't think there's anything holding a newbie back from starting right here.
I think it's better than the Miike film. Miike's made a lot of like crappy live action anime adaptations, like Ace Attorney, like there's a few others. This one, I think, is the anime is I think it's stronger than that. And if you just don't have the time for the comics, this is a good place to go. If you're just curious about the story, it is a classic. Like, people love it for a reason. So, you know, yeah, sure. That wraps it up for us. Lindsay, thank you so much for stopping on by, man.
Okay, had fun.
All right, I'll see you next time.
All right.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Lindsay for stopping on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, wherever you get your podcasts from, leave us a comment, rating, review, you know, all that stuff. It helps the show. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you all next week.